This is Mark Strassman, reporter with California Politics Today. We're about to speak with Dr. H. Rex Green in San Mateo County, California. He's an oncologist and a bioethics consultant. Welcome to California Politics Today.
Hi, thanks.
We're going to talk specifically about the turnaround in the San Mateo County Medical Association on Prop 71. But before we do that, just give us a little bit about your own personal and professional background.
I'm a medical oncologist. I currently am the medical director of a community cancer center. And throughout my medical career, I've had an active interest in bioethics. I joined the Hastings Center over 30 years ago as an original associate member, and I've been a consultant to the State Medical Association's Bioethics Council for the last 5 years. And on that committee for nearly 20 years.
Okay. And when you first learned about, how did you first learn about Proposition 71?
The Ethics Council heard that CMA had taken a position on this.
CMA being the California Medical Association?
Correct.
Right.
On this issue without asking the Ethics Council for an opinion. We were rather surprised. So, we got hold of copies of the initiative and were shocked at its content and recommended that the CMA withdraw its endorsement.
What were the most glaring causes of your shock?
Well, it began with the ethical content, but it's such bad public policy that it included the financial arrangement that was going to hand $3 billion of borrowed money to a handful of researchers and special interest groups for their benefit with no oversight.
Is that more a bull in the china shop or a fox guarding the chicken coop analogy there, would you say?
I would just say it's egregious self-interest.
Okay.
A very small area of the totality of research leading potentially to the cure of human disease is given a $3 billion, essentially no question asked, to see do with as they see fit.
Right. Essentially, there's a whole gamut of approaches to curing or preventing or treating human disease, and you're saying that this sort of concentrates a vast sum of money on one particular front.
Well, yes. To give an example, let's say John Kerry is a president, and what his advisors say is correct, that there's $100 million worth of embryo research that could be funded through the federal government. California's piece of that would be 1/30th of what this initiative gives to the researchers in the state. So they're giving themselves 30 times what a fair and reasonable process of funding through the federal government would grant. And in a recent debate with Professor Irving Weissman, who is one of the leaders of Prop 71, I challenged him on the magnitude of this boondoggle, and he said, and I quote, "They want to corner the market on embryo research." End quote.
So it's kind of such a shock and awe in medical research.
Well, it's brilliant because these guys and their friends have passed the hat and scraped up what to them is pocket change, $20 million, to leverage a $3 billion payoff.
Well, they are venture capitalists. They know about seed money.
You're right. Seed money is seed money for an industry that is so early that it has no proof at this point that it will ever deliver anything of value in exchange for this incredibly exaggerated cost on the state. Remember, the state is borrowing money, so it's going to add up to at least $6 billion of cost to the taxpayers.
This is the state that's $15 billion in debt, right?
Well, it's actually going to be $50 billion by the middle of next year. The state bond rating is low and could very well drop to junk status if they continue this kind of credit card binge. But There's no guarantee these bonds will sell. And the way the initiative is written, that actually the state has to give them the money whether the bonds sell or not. So
are you saying if the bonds don't sell, the state has to take money out of general funds to meet the output of that the bonds would have provided?
Correct. These are general obligation bonds, and the fine print of this initiative says that that the state has to give them the money to cover the unsold bonds.
Well, that's the first I've heard of that, and that makes the financing even more egregious than previously reported.
Well, the initiative was written by some really smart people to disguise its intent. It's covered with this smoke screen that is nothing short of a snake oil pitch, saying they're going to cure everything with this research, when in fact the state of the science is such that it's unknown that it will be beneficial to anybody, and it's quite possible that embryonic research is a dead end because of the technical problems in making therapies based on injecting live cells in the human body is extraordinarily dangerous.
There was something called gene therapy that was very popular about 5 years ago, I understand, and it was getting some money, and some experiments went terribly awry, apparently, and one never hears about gene therapy anymore. Are you saying that a similar thing could happen with stem cell research?
Multiply that 10,000-fold. In gene therapy, they tried to package a repair system in a virus to deliver it, and a couple of people got killed in the early stages of this experiment, including a person who didn't have a disease. It was just a normal volunteer.
Right.
Well, embryonic therapies, take the extreme example, what Ronald Reagan was talking about at the Democratic Convention, his little bio-repair kit,
right,
is in fact a cloned twin brother of Ron Reagan.
Right.
And we know from cloning research that they're rife with genetic defects. So they're going to take this cloned version of Ron Reagan, who's full of genetic defects, not he, but his clone.
Right.
He's a nice kid.
Right.
And they're going to culture out a certain cell line that they think is going to rebuild his nervous system.
Right.
And inject a million cells or more back into his body. Every one of those cells has to work perfectly. If it doesn't, then here's the possibility. I mean, number one, what happens when embryonic cells get recalled in adult life, that's what cancer is. Those cells wander around the body and there is no longer a system that tells them what to do, so they grow in the wrong place and they kill you.
And for example, see if this is right, when the stem cells are part of a developing embryo, then there are mechanisms in place there to either kill and replace cells that go off the reservation, so to speak, or to abort the fetus in the case of gross incompetency of the organism.
Right.
But those mechanisms may not obtain, or may specifically not obtain, if those stem cells are injected into humans.
They may be enhanced,
right,
by the process that's used to take the cells out of the embryo.
Right.
It has this incredibly complicated regulatory system, both internal and external, that tells the cells where to go and what to do and when to do it, and makes them grow and makes them die. And I mean, the choreography involved in embryologic development is so interesting and fascinating to me as a scientist and a physician, that it's utter hubris to say that humans are going to pull these cells out of the embryo and make them dance to our tune. And remember, the rule for therapeutics in this country is that they must be safe as well as effective. And the safety obstacle may be the insurmountable barrier. It may not be. But not only is it the potential that they're injecting experimental cancer into the human body with these live cells, but they're also the potential those cells will incorporate into the genetic tissue and create this whole new Frankenstein monster of genetic disease to be passed on through the generations, or initiate immunologic reactions that are heretofore unimagined within the host organism. So what these extravagant claims haven't shared with the public is all the downside risks. And when they get to the first person who is going to be an experimental subject where they test these out, and, you know, set aside the fact that as far as the embryos are concerned, they're toast. They're being sacrificed for somebody else's benefit. But that first human subject is going to be an extraordinary risk for the rest of that person's life for all of these potential complications. And the language of this initiative, this is what really disturbed our ethics committee. The language of the initiative says that the oversight body that has all this money...
That's the Institute for Regenerative Research.
Right, the Institute for spending the taxpayers' money.
Right.
They have the right to modify the strict federal standards that oversee experimental human experimentation in terms of informed consent and human subjects protections. They can rewrite those rules to suit their, quote, mission and objective.
So essentially they could reinstitute the Tuskegee rules if they wanted.
They can just do whatever they want according to the language of this initiative.
Which, in fact, according to what you've said, could be particularly crucial because if, say, any stem cell injected into anyone has the potential at any point in the future to become either cancerous or to mutate the existing somatic genome of the individual that receives it, that being the underlying fact, participants in the study, either for testing purposes or for therapeutic purposes, could be told, this will cure your fill-in-the-disease, and that's it. And then there's no liability. Does this carry over to the biotech companies who would be doing this work so that if people became grotesque, if a lot of people died, they would have no liability?
That's our interpretation of this. That they're part of this strategy is to create a shield against liability.
Because I recall, I reported on the swine flu debacle. In pertinent part, what happened was the drug companies demanded as a condition before they manufactured the vaccine that the federal government excuse them from any liability from anything that would happen when people took it. In the event, $5 billion of Guillain-Barré syndrome was created by the swine flu. Well, no single person anywhere got the disease, and the federal government was had to pay the $5 billion.
I'm pleased to speak with you. I proudly stated in 1975 that the swine flu epidemic was a politically engineered hoax,
right,
and that the safety testing was inadequate to justify submitting the public to it. So I'm pleased to meet you after
right.
all these years.
Yes, right.
But this same ability to smell fecal material applies to this initiative. This is the most extravagant exercise in self-aggrandizement since the railroad barons in California helped themselves to millions of acres of land in allegedly the public interest.
Well, I'm glad to find someone else who sees that analogy as well, because Leland Stanford was the most egregious participant in that process, and it's his spiritual and legal descendants who are running Stanford University, who are in the form of Irvin Weissman and Paul Berg, who are now carrying on that tradition of taking public money for their own private interest.
You should listen in the debate that was taped. It's going to be on PBS, I think. Professor Weissman became lachrymose, virtually, because even though he's recently been given $12 million from an anonymous donor for his stem cell research, that he doesn't have a building yet. He needs the building. I mean, there's this whole... Without getting into any personal
right.
attacks, this incredible religious belief in the scientific mission that it can do no wrong, that it will answer all questions, and it is an entitlement to public support, irrespective of concerns about competing interests within the public good. For example, I mean, this $6 billion on the backs of the taxpayers of California is going to cut into health care.
Of real people.
Of real people who are sick today. And they walk around saying, well, we're advocating for patients. Well, hello there. The people who depend on the state and on public agencies are, you know, single moms, the working poor, the uninsured, people of color. So these faux liberals are walking around saying, we're advocating for, you know, all these sick people, and the meanwhile, the emergency rooms are closing, the trauma centers are closing. It's the equivalent of Marie Antoinette saying, let them eat cake. And this is going to create therapies, if they ever happen, that only Howard Hughes could afford.
Well, interestingly enough, Howard Hughes' foundation is providing some of the stem cell lines for this, so it would be a full circle there, wouldn't it?
Well, they're worth $12 billion. So if Howard Hughes Medical Institute really wanted to corner the market with their partners, they could fund the whole thing. But Howard Hughes, the people who manage the corpus, are smart and responsible, and they realize that this is such a speculative enterprise that they're not going to gamble their money on this long shot. They'll you know, dribble out some grants to respectable scientists to do research, but it all folds back on the taxpayer as the deep pocket.
Right. One of the arguments in favor of Prop 71 is that it will reduce health care costs in California for Californians. Is that plausible on any level?
Well, I read the economic analysis.
That was paid for by the supporters of Prop 71.
And that, you know, it's better science fiction than I've read in years.
Right.
If you say that, you know, if you make 15 assumptions, then you can come up with any claim.
Right.
When you get to about 8 assumptions, you can build an elephant, and you add one more assumption, and it'll start wiggling its trunk.
Right.
But the fact is, they don't answer the key question. What is the feasibility that any of these therapies will succeed? And honest, reputable, forthright advocates of embryonic research say that we are decades away from knowing. Decades, plural.
Well, what about the argument that if the money is just sort of force feeding a goose a lot of corn, if you do it, apply this much money to it, you'll speed up that timetable?
Well, look at the war on cancer.
Yes, let's.
When I was a kid, in my training days, the Nixon administration decided to throw a lot of money at cancer. It's about $200 billion in counting now. And, you know, I'm an oncologist. This is my field. What was accomplished? The answer is, over 30 years later, there's been a 13% increase in the long-term survival with cancer. Now, there are a lot of good and bad reasons for that, but the fact of throwing that amount of money, which is second only to space exploration as a non-military government expenditure, it has a corrupting influence. What I saw in academia 30 years ago was everybody suddenly became a cancer researcher.
Right.
Because of the flow of money, not because of the strength of their scientific investigation.
Right.
So this whole industry of churning and recycling federal money grew up, and it in fact succumbed to a kind of a mass think where everybody had to do little permutations and variations on the same theme that really reduced creativity and diminished the opportunity to come up with the kind of ideas which we still are looking for.
So it would be a little bit like if the publishing world said only epistolatory novels will be selling from now on, and everybody gets into that field, including people who aren't any good at it, and you end up with a lot more epistolatory novels, but you don't have overall any much improvement in the literary field. And you're saying essentially the same thing happens in research. If a lot of money is thrown at a particular problem in surplus of what it could really bear to get its maximum efficiency.
And the big question is, we live in a community, and the community has to make difficult judgments about how to spend its resources. And if we're actually going to take resources away from sick people who happen to be poor, who happen to be African American or Hispanic, in the hopes of curing something 20 years after they're dead. That kind of discussion belongs in the legislature, where interests are fairly heard and competing interests have a chance to make their case. What instead has happened, and this is by clear intent of the proponents of this initiative, they went the initiative route because this is the best way to bedazzle and befuddle the public. And they have stayed on message throughout. And they have fooled a lot of really reputable organizations. They went to, and I'm not going to name specific names, but a lot of organizations were approached long ago, and the organizations didn't have the good sense to say, is there an opposing viewpoint? Is there somebody we need to check in with before we jump on the bandwagon?
These are essentially what are called patient advocate organizations for various diseases, right?
And other organizations that have, yes, and other. And basically, the proponents said, oh, the only people who are opposed to us are those pro-life Catholics, anti-abortion types.
Right.
And, you know. And so people said, well, if that's it, and this is going to cure everybody.
Right.
You know, they used the kind of reputation and professional authority that goes with these eminent scientists to basically snow everybody, to get a lot of people signed up, which then creates a momentum, and that's all the initiative thing. If they go to the legislature, which is what they should have done, and said, let's start an institute for regenerative medicine. Who's against that? I mean, our side is not against stem cell research, for that matter, but we're for really the appropriate safeguards and oversight, and we have huge concerns, particularly about cloning.
Right.
After all, this initiative is a constitutional amendment to create a right to engage in cloning in California.
Right.
So let's have an institute, and then have the institute look in depth first at what all the risks are, what kind of abuses can come of this. What I'm sure you'll hear from the other person you're calling is the potential for the exploitation of women as sources of large numbers of eggs for cloning research, and the commercialization of IVF embryos, and on and on and on. There's huge potential for abuses and commercialization and commodification, and this initiative was meant to get across the line before any of that consideration happened.
Based on what you said, it sounds like, now, apart from the personal motivation, because it's my understanding that Robert Klein, who is the principal author of the initiative, has a sick son who has diabetes, who he wants to find a cure for. Putting that aside is a completely valid and reasonable and admirable motivation. As a venture capitalist and as friend of venture capitalists, they essentially got together with scientists at venture capitalists from Portola Valley got together with scientists at Stanford to then used leverage that credibility to go to the organizations and say, as you just explained, here's the upside. There's no downside. Then those organizations got together and present to the voters a picture of cures, no downside, and so on, so that it's in the same way that a venture capitalist starts a corporation, and then there's the founders, and then there's the employees, and then there's the investors, with this kind of widening circle of people who are taken into the fold. That's the same process that they're using here for this initiative, aren't they?
Absolutely. And it's just like Deep Throat said, you follow the money, and it starts with the question that a lot of people have grasped: why $3 billion? Where did that number
right.
come from?
Where?
If Kerry says, if his advisors are right, there's potentially 100 million of federal-funded embryo research. How in the world did they get to $3 billion? And the answer to me is quite clearly that this is the biggest coalescence of self-interest in the history of mankind, that this represents every researcher's wish list, every entrepreneur venture capitalist who has an interest in this area of biotech wish list with lots of buildings and no risk and no nothing and guaranteed employment and income for the next 10 years and enough money left over to buy the silence of a lot of legitimate researchers who see through this thing, but for one reason or the other, they have been told to remain silent until after the election day.
And in fact, in a classic formulation, they can come and complain and be told, well, how would you like your own lab, just to keep quiet, essentially, and buy those people off to do that? Isn't there something you'd like to research? We can call that regenerative medicine as well, and buy people off that way?
Well...
Or am I being more cynical than they are to say that?
It's hard to be too cynical with this, but I know on certain campuses that individuals, prominent individuals who have spoken out and questioned the propriety of doing this are persona non grata. That because it risks a huge chunk of money coming to the university, and the dean, you know, according to the initiative, the dean gets to take at least, you know, 25% off the top for overhead costs, the dean's tax.
Right.
So you take 25% of $3 billion, and that's some serious money. That vastly exceeds the revenue stream to the University of California of all of their royalties and patents and licenses and everything else.
So what then happens to the scientific medical culture based on truth rather than on following the money or going after the money, if there's that much intimidation possible now just in the process of getting this passed, what would happen once this regime came into power?
Well, they're going to go back for more.
Ah.
They've established a precedent that if you can cook up this kind of a tale, I mean, I can't wait for the guys in Utah to go ask for $1 billion for cold fusion.
Right.
I mean, it's going to eliminate air pollution and the reliance on imported oil,
right,
and so on. And nobody says, well, fellas, what's the feasibility and are there any dangers? I mean, everybody gets on the bandwagon.
And the palladium manufacturers would support it, I'm sure.
This is the most horrendous precedent. And to have, I mean, noteworthy politicians at a time the state of California is in sad financial shape to get on board shows the kind of power that's behind it, the kind of money-driven power that can just co-opt societal resources for an incredibly narrow self-interest, a startup industry that has no product to sell, no assurance that they'll ever deliver anything.
But what is certain is that the researchers and the developers would get $300 million a year.
Even if the bonds don't sell.
Okay. Let's focus on risk and a reward here. It's my understanding that the way capitalism works is that people put up their money, and if the project doesn't pan out, they lose their money. And if it does pan out, they get rewarded with profits. How is that being turned on its head here so that the public is taking all the risk and the private companies and entrepreneurs are getting all the benefit?
Well, the argument they use is a parallel to federal funding, although this is a caricature. It's a charade of federal funding. This is the self-interest of getting together and giving up the loot, including that they can give themselves as much as $6 million per grant, which is unprecedented at the federal level. But we taxpayers, through the federal government, fund basic research, research that has no prospect ever of delivering any particular useful thing. We don't fund it on the scale that this initiative envisions. Again, back to the federal role in stem cell research. Total federal spending last year was $350 million on stem cell research nationwide. $25 million was embryo research. You say, well, that's... Somebody says, okay, George Bush cut that back. Fair enough. So let's say John Kerry, then you throw in another $75 million. So that's the scale that the science justifies.
Right.
Is in the $350 million a year range nationwide.
Do the proponents justify the massive increase over that justifiable amount in any way? Or do they just say, the cure will come sooner if we spend more money?
They've backed away from saying that cures come sooner. In fact, the most disgusting thing I've heard is several of their spokesmen claim they never said that cures are imminent, that this is the patients misinterpreting and getting their hopes up and blaming the patients for believing
patients.
What they see on television 65 times a day.
What the website for Yes on 71 calls itself the Cures Initiative.
Right, and that is so tawdry. This is at the level of basic research, and it fits in that context. Our group doesn't oppose basic research. We don't oppose stem cell research per se. We think this is such a new area that the real effort should be made not in throwing $3 billion at it, but having a conversation that looks at the necessary safeguards to move forward.
Right.
And you know, our friends to the north in Canada, this is not a radical society. They took a look at the cloning aspect of this and said, no way, no research cloning, no reproductive cloning, no nothing. It's impossible to get your arms around it once you do it.
We haven't talked about that much. Maybe we could just say a little bit, and then I want to get, obviously there's a lot more to explore here, but on the question of cloning, apparently the language of Prop 71 says there will be no human reproductive cloning, but there will be somatic stem cell transfer. Is that a distinction without a difference, and why is that a difference in language provided?
It's a distinction without a difference, and it's actually what the language says. Part of this initiative is a constitutional amendment, which will make it very hard to undo. But the language says that it creates a right to engage in, and then they throw in scientific gobbledygook, but the answer is the right to engage in cloning for purposes of research, and they will not fund reproductive cloning.
Oh, is that right? It doesn't ban reproductive cloning?
It does not ban it.
It just says, in the same way that Bush says you can do embryonic stem cell research as long as it's on a stem cell it's line that's already been created, this initiative says you can't get, and he wouldn't fund it, you can still do it. It's saying that you can do reproductive cloning research as long as you don't get funds out of the $3 billion for it.
They very narrowly define reproductive cloning as well. This is very artfully written,
right,
to deceive, but they won't fund it. And I've confronted their spokesman, and they say, well, we didn't put that in there because it's already illegal in California. And I said, here you had in your hands a constitutional amendment, and you could have written to make absolutely crystal clear. First of all, you could have used clear English that,
right,
says cloning, that says embryo. The word embryo doesn't appear in there once.
Right.
I said, you could have used clear language, but throw in two or three words, and you could have made vividly clear that this constitutional right to engage in research cloning prohibits reproductive cloning.
And scientifically, the only distinction is the cloning that takes place when a egg is denucleated and genetic material from another organism is put in, and it's vivified, and then it starts reproducing. If it's broken apart at the blastocyst stage,
right,
the stem cells are taken out. If it's implanted in a uterus, it can conceivably, I don't know, pun semi intended, could grow to be to birth.
Theoretically, although it appears that humans and primates are uniquely ill-disposed to go there.
Right.
But the dishonesty embedded in what they did, they put a lot of work into writing.
Right. I detect a real tone of admiration for their unscrupulousness here.
Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely. I'm one of the few people that's read this initiative carefully, and I understand... good work when I see it, even if it's to the for wrong purposes.
Somewhere in Shakespeare he says there are heroes in evil as well as good.
Well, that's where these guys are. But what they wrote then, they actually defined reproductive cloning as forming, and again they use somatic cell nuclear transfer rather than cloning, but cloning for the purpose of putting the embryo in a uterus. Well, us folks who have some knowledge of the field, there's a process known as ectogenesis, where it's we're not far from having an artificial placenta such that embryos can be carried through extrauterine development long past the state of implantation. So this initiative qua constitutional amendment is utterly silent. And and if you look at some of their other language, they say initially their stem cells will be limited to the first 12 days. Initially. So that's an absolutely meaningless prohibition. It means if, you know, if the money says they need to go further, so they can in fact create cloned embryos, grow them in an artificial environment, and they have billions of dollars to play with, to a further stage of development, theoretically to the stage of fetal development, because there is some scientific evidence coming in now that might suggest that the fetus is really the best place to get these robust stem cells to regrow stuff.
In other words, they reach they ripen to a further state of appropriateness in a fetus beyond an embryo.
Right. They have put prohibitions basically on nothing.
If you're saying that they said you can't put it into a uterus, that doesn't mean you can't put it into a Chiron pregnancy surrogate unit.
Exactly. An artificial placenta, artificial whatever.
An artificial womb along the lines of the Central London Hatchery in Brave New World.
And nothing in there prohibits this.
And the granting of, and with the $300 million a year, someone would probably want to work on that project.
$3 billion, you know, it buys an awful lot of interest and curiosity. And some of us feel that this all adds up to cloning research, because IVF embryos, in fact, are in scarce supply.
Right.
And if there are any viable prohibitions against selling IVF embryos, then that's not going to improve, even when the demand increases. And the way these guys have approached it, like a bunch of venture capitalists, one of the interesting problems with IVF embryos is once the public really wakes up, if they approach you to donate little Fred for science, they're supposed to tell you exactly what they're going to do, not just, you know, have at it and good luck. They're supposed to say, I'm going to grow a cell line that, say, has Tay-Sachs disease,
right,
and I'm going to sell that cell line all over the world, and then I'm going to say, sell it? Well, I'd like a piece of the action there,
right,
friend. And not only do I want $100,000 up front, but I want 5% royalties. These guys don't want to go there. They want to manufacture the embryos in a setting where it is so complicated, nobody can exactly give consent. And that's cloned embryos. And here's what I mean. If you do the Ron Reagan thing, then his repair kit is his twin brother. Well, in ethics, he has no right to give consent to the destruction of his brother for his own benefit. In fact, there's an obvious conflict of interest there.
Well, we can quote Cain, who said, am I my brother's keeper?
Am I my brother's destroyer?
Right.
So then, I mean, this really gets to be bizarre. That is, okay, he's his clone's brother. The egg donor is only related by virtue of the mitochondria. So
right.
That's kind of a
tenuous connection.
Tenuous motherhood. So the real parent
is the father.
Are Nancy and Ron Reagan.
Right.
Those are the parents.
Right.
So do they have to give consent to form and use that? I mean, this gets to be such a quagmire that everybody is, I mean, the argument that a couple of ethicists on the President's Council said is just cloned embryos aren't human, they're not embryos, they're not anything, and nobody has to give consent.
Isn't this a sort of a specific application of two different problems that are sort of converging on this? One is that technology, I'm used to this mostly in computer technology, but it's also the case in biotechnology, I think, that the technology goes faster than the legal system can keep up with it, and especially faster than almost all of the legislators are capable of assimilating what the science is in order to understand what it is that would need to be regulated if they had the will to do it.
Well, that's on purpose.
No.
There was a wonderful Protestant theologian who died sadly over 30 years ago named Paul Ramsey, and he was really a very accurate observer of the scientific world, and he was one of the founding parents of bioethics. And this is where I'm coming from. Everything that I'm saying is basically founded on my lifetime involvement in bioethics. That there's a species of ethicists that's now being produced who make a living making apologies for what science is going to do and has already done. And that a real ethics has to be able to say, no, we're not going to go there.
Well, there's a long-standing religious tradition of doing that, isn't there? Where the king's bishop will say whatever the king is doing is the will of God?
Right. And this initiative, here's how they do their ethics. They have a 19-member working group, four of whom are medical ethicists per the standards that they put together, which would preclude, you know, skeptics like me from sitting on that body and giving them a hard time. But even if they said that, Cardinal Mahoney and three parish priests were there, they would be outvoted on every vote and have absolutely no impact whatsoever. Thoughtful people in this field, including, amazingly, the Geron Corporation put together an ethics advisory board years ago. They said that this is such difficult stuff that there should be, besides an institutional review board, there should be an autonomous ethics advisory board that oversees this research. The federal government actually has similar guidelines in terms of using vulnerable populations, and including fetuses. The feds have a requirement that fetal research have separate review by a federal ethics advisory board. So these guys, again, are trying to defeat long-established standards of ethical oversight of human research so they can get to the market first.
So it's also in the same procedure that they used to hire this company in Menlo Park to do the economic research to come up with the findings that they like. Then they hire ethicists to come up with the findings that they like. And then they publicize to the public, look, the experts have said it'll make money for the state of California, and it's good. Let's go ahead and do it.
It is the most colossal snake oil pitch,
okay,
of all time.
Let's focus on the political side of this now. You said originally that the California Medical Association had gone ahead without consulting its ethics panel. What finally happened with the California Medical Association and their endorsement of Prop 71?
They're still endorsers.
Okay.
Actually, they endorsed it without either asking the ethics or the scientific council. So we raised a big stink.
We being whom?
The Ethics Council.
Right.
So they officially requested our opinion and the opinion of the Science Council. At the following board meeting, they got reports from us saying withdraw endorsement, from the Science Council saying give us the money and we'll get back to you.
Right.
And
I'm sorry, who said what about giving us the money and we'll get back to you?
The Scientific Council.
Oh, give us more money to investigate whether it's scientific?
They like the price tag.
Okay.
So they want the money.
Right.
They want to do the research. And that was the perfect, stalemate.
So it was tied 1-1. The ethicists didn't like it, and the scientists did.
Right. So the board said, well, it would really embarrass us to change our position. So what they did, though, actually, they did change their position. They withdrew permission to use the name of the California Medical Association on the ballot argument.
Right.
Now, the proponents will deny that they ever wanted it, but they were positioned to be signers, and they're not.
Right.
And the CMA also has not taken an active role in advocating for Prop 71.
So you did slow them down a little bit.
Our leadership realizes that they made a big mistake. They're talking out of two sides of their mouth. On the one hand, they're pushing Prop 72, which is an access bill that's going to put significant costs on the business community, but to prop up our failing health care system and cover some more people. And it's the best idea in the moment in this terrible economic environment. So they're on the one hand out there pushing to upgrade the health care system in the face of the economic problems, and on the other side they're saying, but yeah, give $3 billion to these scientists and tell them to have fun. I can't imagine how our leaders, CMA's leaders, are going to go to the legislature next year begging for crumbs for some health-related thing and not be laughed out of the legislature.
Okay, now that's what happened with the CMA. You're also a member, I assume, of the San Mateo County Medical Association. What happened there? What was their original take on Prop 71?
I joined the board at its most recent meeting. I'm a new board member. At a prior board meeting, they had, to my understanding, endorsed CMA's endorsement.
Right.
And I basically went to the meeting and said, wait a minute, you know, guys, let's look at the price tag here. And it didn't take much, actually. You know, $6 billion over 30 years and no assurance of anything to come from it. And the board, by, I think, a 9-3 vote, withdrew its endorsement.
Had it already made an endorsement?
Yes.
By essentially signing on to the CMA, or yeah, it's independent?
I wasn't at that meeting, so I can't tell you chapter and verse.
Right, but essentially it said we concur with the CMA's view.
And they had allowed the Prop 71 campaign
right.
to use that, and we sent an official letter to the Prop 71 campaign saying we withdrew endorsement. And my position at that meeting, my argument was not to take an opposed position because we didn't have somebody present who was a proponent for the initiative. I just said, with this price tag, it's good enough reason for us not to endorse this thing. And I think about the same time, the Biotech Council of Silicon Valley had taken a similar action. Because, as somebody mentioned it, I hadn't known it at the time. So a lot of thoughtful people who've had a chance to look at this initiative are having second thoughts, unless their organization is already so deep into it that
right.
they would be embarrassed to pull out.
Now, have other... I assume there's a county medical association in each of the other 57 counties in California.
And I have no idea if they've taken action. I believe the San Francisco Medical Association is a strong supporter of the initiative, but otherwise I'm not too conversant on what other counties' associations have done.
Okay, let's wrap up by talking about the politics of this for the next 2 weeks. The election is going to be in about 12 days, I think. And the proponents of Prop 71 have about $20, $25 million in their account, and presumably we're going to see a lot more of Dr. Irving Weissman explaining what a good idea this is. It's my understanding that the no on 71, including both the right to the pro-life people and the scientific people and the women's rights people, have about $150,000 to $200,000. So it's about a 100 to 1 advantage to the pro side on the money. How is the message, the stuff that we've been discussing, the issues we've been discussing, the facts we've been discussing, the ethical and financial and political aspects of this, beyond having 10 million people come to the California Politics Day website and listen to what you've had to say, how are you going to get the message out? Or will you be able to?
It's all going to be earned media. We show up any place where offered equal time, and insofar as we have a chance to make our statement, the information is pretty compelling. Because the opposition, basically, they didn't expect to get any organized opposition that they couldn't marginalize as
religious fanatics.
Religious fanatics, and they were utterly unprepared for people from the progressive left
right.
to jump on them. And it's an amazing coalition we've put together. Our side has been endorsed by the California Green Party, the Peace and Freedom Party.
Which side?
The No on 71.
Right.
We have the Green Party, Peace and Freedom Party, the Libertarian Party, and the California Republican Party.
Everybody except the Democrats.
Everybody but the Dems. And but the proponents have a lot of money to put a lot of stuff on the television, and it's all going to be, a lot of it is going to be, you know, like using Michael J. Fox, celebrity patients advocating for cures, which is manipulation of the worst sort, and there's no way directly to rebut that. And Lord knows if they have some kind of an October surprise up their sleeve to, you know, go for. They can buy so much media time that there's no way we can in any way counter that.
Now, I interviewed Tom McClintock a few weeks ago, and he said this was the biggest self-serving scam he'd ever heard of, and that's a quote rather than a paraphrase. And he said he'd be willing to debate the other side. I've asked the stem cell initiative organization 10 times to bring someone to debate Tom McClintock, and they haven't returned one of the calls. I've asked Irving Weissman and Paul Berg at Stanford to debate Tom McClintock, and they've declined. If they have all the paid media and they won't debate...
This is a brilliantly run campaign. This is a lesson in how to scam the California voters. They put a lot of time and a lot of effort into preparation. The way they manage their public appearances, McClintock is our star. He's our A player. So they try to avoid any opportunity of debating him.
We're sort of the Boston Red Sox, and they're kind of the New York Yankees, but we saw what happened yesterday.
Well, here's the deal. I mean, the same thing happens to me. I'm so flattered. They consider me to be one of the difficult people because I guess I can communicate a clear message. So when I'm in a debate format, they only send out their staffers to debate me.
Right.
And they have their usual memorized script.
Right.
And they throw it out, and they get the last word, so they invariably throw out some dirty comment that can't be rebutted, and they will plant people in the audience to try to ask embarrassing questions and so on. So they know how to manage all aspects of this thing. They, I think, made a mistake when PBS called that the radio that I got to debate Weissman,
right,
who's not exactly very terse on the radio.
I'm sure.
But I managed to get a few words in edgewise and got him to make that unbelievable statement that they're trying to corner the market on embryo research.
Well, I've already been hearing that the people in Wisconsin are very frightened of what's going to happen to them if the market is cornered by California. And they've been doing a lot of stem cell research. Apparently everyone will go fleeing the state to come to California. I interviewed Robert Lanza, who's the scientific vice president at Advanced Cell Technology, which used a Howard Hughes, Harvard cell line to develop retinal epithelial cells, stem cells. And he says they're opening another headquarters in California so they can get the money.
Of course.
So overall, then, it seems that this really goes beyond science or medicine here. It's essentially a model for a coup d'etat of the scientific enterprise by a group of people who are very successful business people.
It's the biotech industrial complex, analogous to the same kind of outrageous self-interest that brought us the $900 hammer and the $600 toilet seat,
which were all justified in the name of quote national security. We need to spend that much for a hammer because national security. Here it is, cures for terrible diseases.
Cures.
Okay, well, I think we've beaten this one into the ground by now. I'm going to get this out as far as I can on our website, and I'm going to encourage you to link, get people to link to it as well, and we'll see what happens, and I'm going to talk to some other people, and I'll see. I've become desperate here in terms of getting this debate together. Maybe I can get someone, maybe you'd be able to make the adopt a persona of a pro-71 person. And you can make all of the specious arguments, and Tom McClintock could put them down. So let's consider that as a way of getting, of illustrating the point. I'm not a pro-71 person, but you play one on in this debate or something.
I think based on what they claim in public that they should be able to clone a pro-71 spokesman within weeks.
Exactly. Maybe they already have and we don't know it. All right. Well, I want to thank you again, and let's look forward to 12 more days of pretty exciting stuff here and see if we can get the message out to more people.
Good talking to you.
Good talking to you. Talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.